It's a Roe Khan Show with Anna DeBlancis right here on 720 WGN. Chicago White Sox broadcaster C. Stone joins us right now.
Hello, Steve.
We get ready for the week in White Sox. And how great, Steve. By the way, brought to you by, let me do this, brought to you by Let Us Entertain You Restaurants. Let Us Entertain You Restaurants, serving the greater Chicago area since 1975. All right.
I was at Il Porcellino a couple of nights ago and tried a pasta Benetti, named after my partner, by the way. You love it. Jason loves it. And I think it's pretty good.
How cool.
Jason Benetti, I just got to tell you, is one of the greatest young finds in all of baseball. What an amazing announcer he is.
Well, I don't know if he would be the greatest announcer that any team could have anywhere in baseball, but I will tell you that he's the greatest announcer that the White Sox could have here in Chicago. Number one, he's going to get the Ford Frick Award way, way down the road because he's got a lot of years left, but he's just outstanding. Nobody prepares like him. He's got a great voice. He has a tremendous understanding of the game, and he loves the game. And so working with him has been a pleasure. His parents were White Sox fans before he was born. The family continues to be White Sox fans. It's just a great story out of Homewood Flossmoor, and plus the fact that he has enormous ability. And the fact is that he works as hard as anybody that I've ever seen and harder than most. So I don't think that Jerry Reinsdorf and Scott Reifert and Bob Grimm and Brooks Boyer could have made a better hire than Jason Benetti.
I don't either. I mean, if you're watching the TV broadcast, he's got such a touch with this because he's like you said, his voice is very soothing. And I know you've worked with great legends, right? I mean, let's face it. But there is something that is just that he's soothing, but he's also you have this sense, and this I think is what makes a great baseball broadcaster, because it's different than all other sports, because you're not just doing the baseball game. It's a 4 hour, 3.5 hour, whatever it turns out to be, show in that's different than just the action on the field, because there's so much time in between the action. So there's a lot of storytelling, there's a lot of interactivity, and you got to go in different directions. And you know, you've worked with greats, you yourself. I mean, sometimes you got to call a guy out for doing something that doesn't make any kind of sense, or you got to give some sort of context to something that only baseball guys would know. But one thing that Benetti does that I think is absolutely amazing is that he gives you this sense that at any given moment he might be saying something that you're just not quite sure. You know, there's suspense to what he does. He is a genius, and he's young. How old is that guy?
Well, don't forget he's looking at the game through 35-year-old eyes, and so because he's a millennial, he has a different approach to baseball than most. And what I really like, I get a great deal of pleasure, by the way, out of. He'll come up and he said, "You know, I was just thinking about," and then he gives this idea about how to change the game. He said, "You know, this idea is going to be a little different, but this is what I think should happen." And I said, "Yes, that is an idea. It's not a good idea, but it is an idea, certainly." And so it's really nice to see what he comes up with. I like to irritate him a bit, which is good. And he likes to debate with me, which is also good, because every now and then we get into a dispute, an argument that really is not really an argument, but it's his point of view, my point of view, and he will back up his point of view with a certain amount of numbers and everything that he does as a 35-year-old. So it's really interesting, and I think it makes for a good balanced
project. It does. Love the article on you guys in the Sun-Times just a little while back about kind of calling you perfect strangers, because it seemingly don't have that much in common, yet it so works when you come together, that chemistry.
Let me say one thing. The best part of happened today, because I flew in from Arizona. I had a bit of a break, and I read that Danny Farquhar is not only out of the hospital, but he's recovering nicely at home. The doctor said he will pitch again. He can't pitch this year because of the recovery, but this was the best news. It just made my whole day, and I think anybody associated with the White Sox and the various teams that Danny played for know what a wonderful man he is. And the fact that his wife and his mother were in the stands when he did collapse in the dugout, and the fact that the personnel got to him so quickly. So kudos to the White Sox and their EMTs and the doctors at Rush. And Danny is doing just fine. I know he's got a million well-wishers, and so the story is just great. It's a beautiful story, and it made my day.
Yeah,
a lot
it really
of
is.
Fans' days.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. I mean, and again, this isn't really about whether or not he ever pitches again. You know, just that they can have, a life with his family and do whatever he wants to do moving forward. But the fact that you know he's so intent upon returning, and this is one of those really unique moments. I think every Chicago sports franchise has had a development moment. And there are so many storylines that surround this young team right now. It is fun to watch. And we were talking last week with you about are they having too much fun for a team that isn't that productive on the field? But you do see that, like Tim Anderson. Can I just go back to Tim Anderson for a second? Here is a kid.
Here,
you
go get him.
You watch this kid. You watch this kid right now, and as a team leader. And as a guy, he had a little kerfuffle because he was, celebrating too much. And the other teams were like, hey, you can't celebrate, scoreboard or whatever it said.
Right.
But when, what was it? Saturday, was it that he had two home runs Saturday? I mean, this is you're watching an emerging baseball star in Chicago. Obviously, the North Side now is packed with, a murderer's row, although they're having a little bit of a slide right now. But wow, I just, the thing that scares me a little bit, and I know that you're not, no one's privy to what, front office is going to do in a moment like this, but are there at a point where you're really trying to develop, there are untouchables, right, on these teams? Would Tim Anderson be one of those?
No, absolutely not. Look, if they want to trade Mike Trout for Tim Anderson, they'll back up the plane for him and send him to Anaheim. So there are no untouchables. Babe Ruth was sold to the New York Yankees from the Boston Red Sox. If he wasn't an untouchable, there is no such thing. And when you're trying to build a ball club that's less than a dynasty, you don't have untouchables. I haven't seen an untouchable. I haven't seen anybody that can't be traded. I mean, that's just kind of the way it is. If a team wants to overpay tremendously for him, then yes, they would move him in a heartbeat. However, that being said, they're not going to shop him. He's not one of those guys they want to shop because I think the upside is unlimited. I told him before the season that he was going to hit 25 home runs this year, and nothing he's done thus far has dissuaded me that he's not going to do that. I think he's surprisingly strong. I don't think people realize how strong he is. He can use all parts of the field, and he will. And when he figures out what the pitchers are trying to do to him, I think from an offensive side, I think it's unlimited what he can do. However, as a young player, what he has to learn is to keep the focus on the field, to anticipate the ball coming to him each and every time. That's the sort of mental discipline that all young players have to go through. And Tim has some mental lapses, but his talent is astronomical. When you understand that he was late to the game of baseball, he was a basketball player, and he picked up baseball a lot later than most, you realize just how far he's come. And you saw the talent that made him a White Sox number one draft pick. So Tim Anderson has an unlimited upside. What he has to learn is the ability to think his way through situations on a play-by-play basis. Don't always go for the flashy play. When you turn a double play, you've got to make sure it's turned. Yeah. And harking back to Omar Vizquel playing shortstop, every double play that was supposed to be made, Omar made it. He could make the flashy play, but he made every routine play. When Tim gets to that point, there is no doubt he's going to be one of the more valuable players on this team. And I think because he is becoming a team leader on a team that desperately needs someone like Tim Anderson, they will not shop him. So, again, someone comes to them and knocks their eyes out with a deal, sure, he'll be traded like everybody else, but they don't want to trade him. They believe, along with Moncada, that's a double play combination for many years to come.
I want to go over to the other side of town for a second. It was sure. An unspeakable injury. Mm. An unspeakable injury on Saturday. Yadier Molina is a first ballot Hall of Famer. As far as mm-hmm. I'm concerned,
No doubt about that. That's by acclamation. He's going to make it for sure.
Yeah, and Dr. and Mrs. Molina, who sent I don't know how many kids into Major League Baseball, there should be like a family mm-hmm. membership in the Hall of Fame, I think, in Cooperstown. But Chris Bryant fouled off a ball, hit him in the groin. He couldn't get him up. He had to have this surgery. He had a hematoma as a result of this. Mm-hmm. He's out for at least 4 weeks. I mean, and you don't ever think about baseball injuries, right? You always think about unspeakable injuries in football and even some in basketball. Mm-hmm. But this, but wow. I mean, and, you know, that was quite a moment right there. And you really, you know, you hope, because here's a guy who's, it was so spectacular and so much fun to watch behind the plate. And, you know, one of the most deadly, you know, second base, you know, pickoff guys. He's just an amazing, amazing, amazing athlete. And, you know, you just hope that he comes back from that. And you wonder, you know, as a catcher, you know, guys who've had, you know, the memory of that alone is just going to be something that's going to be hard to come back
from.
Yeah,
people saw that video, cringed. When they saw
it. Well, don't forget a couple of things. First of all, that is not a first in baseball. It will not be a last. There was a pitcher years ago named Wade Blasingame who got hit with a line drive and actually lost a testicle, had to have it surgically removed. So, I mean, this happens all the time. You find catchers who wear cups. You find sometimes it breaks the cup, especially the ones who use the hard plastic. And I think all pitchers should wear them. And I remember a former major league player who was now a manager when I was in Class A. His name was Roy McMillan. And I asked him, when he played, did he wear a cup? And he said, son, I've been around this game so long, when I watch a game on television, I wear a cup. it kind of explains to you just a little bit about where the thought process for infielders are. And as far as Yadier, he's going to come back. He's going to come back every bit as good as he was. And yes, obviously he's never going to forget that. When you look at the video, it is cringeworthy. But you realize, first of all, these guys that play behind the plate, each and every one of them, they might not be the greatest catchers around, but they're universally about the toughest guy on the field. You cannot play that position unless you are an astonishingly tough guy, because you just what they call swallow the pain. You get hit in the point of the shoulder. I started as a catcher. And I got to tell you, I got hit in the point of the shoulder. I wanted to cry. Of course, I was a young kid. I probably did cry. But getting hit on top of the foot, getting hit by a, you know, we didn't wear the hard helmets then. You get hit on a backswing. You get hit in the back of the head. Ouch. Even with a hard helmet, that's going to rattle your cage. And plus, foul tips routinely off the mask. I'm shocked. Do you remember what football players used to wear? It wasn't a pad exactly, but it stopped the head from going back. I think Brian Cox,
the neck roll,
wore one of those.
Yeah,
I'm surprised that catchers don't do that because of the whiplash that they sustain and the amount of concussions that they have. I mean, Joe Mauer's not catching because of all the concussions he had. It's a tough position played by very tough guys. Molina is one of those guys. He'll come back and he will assume his rightful position behind the plate, and then eventually he'll make his way to Cooperstown as the best of the flying Molina brothers. There was three of them.
Yes.
He's the one who's the best of the three by far.
Yeah. Just amazing. And catchers, I'll never forget as a kid watching Steve Swisher, who was a catcher for the Cubs, play in St. Louis. It was like an 11 o'clock start. It was a getaway day, and it was 110 degrees in the sun. And I remember at the end of that, the next day they talked about how Steve Swisher had lost 20 pounds during the game.
I lost 10 pitching on July 4th, and, you know, you try to put it back, but it's, you know, you're exhausted. Plus, Steve Swisher was traded as one of the four players, including me, traded to from the White Sox to the Cubs in the deal for Ron Santo, which I describe as the trade that hurt both teams. Santo played 1 year and then he quit. And, of course, I did not win the Cy Young Award with the Cubs. And Swisher was over there along with Ken Frehling and Jim Kremel. Not exactly household names, but that was the deal. It was 4-for-1, and it didn't work out particularly well for either team. But Swisher turned out to be a wonderful, in horse racing,
yes,
they call it a stud.
He was a sire.
He gave birth to Nick Swisher, who had a really nice career.
Yeah.
Was a member of the White Sox for a bit, but Nick did very well in his career, and he was Steve's son. So
we give
Steve credit for that.
Yes, we do. All right. Thank you very much, Stoney. We will talk to you soon. Steve Stone,
Thanks, great Steve.
Steve Stone.
Take care.
All right.
Bye, man.
So White Sox baseball starts again tomorrow, right here on 720 WGN. A lot of interesting storylines there on the South Side this year. Let us now find out from Judy what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
A decision on the Iran deal expected tomorrow.
Oh, boy. The news or the sports or the traffic? The traffic.
Let's
the traffic.
Traffic
is brought to you by Blaine's Farm and Fleet. Here's Violetta.